Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Alistair Spears. I'm a Senior Operations Program Manager for Office 365. I'm based in Redmond, in Seattle, in our Office 365 team. And I'm here today to talk about powering IT transformation with Office 365 and essentially some of our roadmap of features that we've been working on over the last 12 months and things that you'll see in the next 12 months in Office 365. So before we get started, who's using Office 365 today? Excellent. Who's not using it but thinking about it? A couple of you. Okay, excellent. Great. Well, hopefully I don't have to go over too many of the basics. It's great to be back here in Australia. You can probably tell from my accent I'm originally from Australia, but it's slowly fading away. I've been over in Redmond 7 years now. And it's been a really interesting time to see how far this Office 365 thing has grown. When I started, it was just an early beta or beta. And since then, it's grown and grown into this massive multi-billion-dollar business at Microsoft with a huge amount of investments and assets and really interesting features. So hopefully, you guys are benefiting from a lot of that as well. I want to start with kind of a little bit of a different quote. This is from Klaus Schwab, talking about the fourth industrial age and this notion that we're on the cusp of this interesting business and digital transformation, once again, another industrial revolution. Personally, I think it sounds much better when you say it with a Swiss accent. We stand on the brink of a technological revolution, but I'll stop there. But what does it mean by this fourth industrial age, and how do we characterize these industrial ages? Well, the first industrial age, if we think back, was the invention of steam or water-powered industrial revolution. The second was combustion, electricity, mass production. The third, in the 60s, was this rise of electronics, of robotics, of IT. And now, as we look forward, we really see this new fourth age of these cyber physical systems that are very different from kind of the third age of traditional IT, traditional electronics, traditional infrastructure. The things that categorize this fourth industrial age are things like unprecedented processing power, the access to unprecedented, effectively unlimited storage, unlimited access to knowledge, both real and alternative knowledge, and the blurring of lines between what is the physical environment, what is the digital environment, even what is the biological environment. We see this really interesting kind of transition going on now, and I think you saw it in the keynote with things like HoloLens, with things like real-time sensors for microclimates and agribusiness. And all of these things are kind of coalescing together into this really interesting digital transformation for a lot of organizations. So at Microsoft, we think of this digital transformation in three ways, and kind of we all have a role to play in this digital transformation, whether you're driving digital transformation in your own organizations or whether you're preventing digital transformation for as long as possible inside of your organization. But at Microsoft, these are the big three things, and we talked about them in the keynote as well. But for the Office team, we're really focusing on how to reinvent productivity and business processes. And this is something that we kind of feel very passionate about. We spend a lot of time working on what is the right productivity tool in the modern environment. Is it still Word? When you open up a Word processor, should you still see an A4 piece of paper, even though the chances of that document ever seeing a printer are getting rarer and rarer as we go on? And so for Office 365, which for 90% of you that are already using Office 365, you know that it's a suite of software, a lot of different capabilities. And we have something in the order of 10,000 engineers working on all of these capabilities behind the scenes in Office 365. Some of these are quite common, and you see these quite a lot: Word, Excel, Outlook, OneDrive, SharePoint, and those sorts of things. There's a lot of other capabilities in Office 365 that aren't as apparent. Some of our security capabilities, some of our networking capabilities around the world as well. It's grown quite a lot. We don't have as many data centers as the Azure guys, but we like to think that we have all their good ones. And across Office 365, when we're seeing these massive amount of users, massive amount of emails, Skype meetings, and just the data alone, 256 petabytes of data in Office 365. You know, and I'm not putting these up to brag necessarily, but it's very humbling for us to kind of be managing the infrastructure and the productivity infrastructure for over 70 million users around the world, almost three times the population of Australia, using Office 365 every month. And so it's a heavy responsibility for us to keep uptime. We hold ourselves accountable to a 99.9% SLA. What that means in real times is we allow ourselves about 43 minutes of downtime every month, which is kind of a humongous effort from all of our systems. All those different components operating at that level of uptime and resiliency is quite a big challenge for our team. We spend a lot of time making sure that all of these capabilities are up and running as easy as possible. Traditionally, what you would do is you just kind of lock the scope. The best way to get efficiency is by not adding any new features to an environment and just leaving it there for 5 to 10 years. But that's just not the reality of our cloud computing software. And in our kind of DevOps model, where the engineers are driving new capabilities and supporting the capabilities out there, we have to consistently look at adding new features, what the impact of those new features into the environment looks like as it scales out to one user, to 10 users, to 1,000 users, to millions of users. We watch very closely everything that's going on in our environment and in our data center as well. And so that's informed really four big areas of investment across Office 365, and I'll talk all about all of these as we go through. Collaboration, mobility, intelligence, and trust. And for the last 12 months and for the next 12 months, these are the big areas of investment that you'll see improved in Office 365. Now, collaboration is a big topic. There's a lot of different capabilities in Office 365 for collaboration. The one thing I'd like to leave you with is this notion of an Office 365 group. This kind of new capability, and my colleague Christoph Feisinger has a session after this talking about groups in more detail. But this group is kind of the fundamental building block of a lot of our collaboration platforms going forward. Essentially, what a group allows us to do is to identify this working relationship between people. And just like you can assign a mailbox to a user, you can assign a mailbox to a group, or a team site to a group, and those sorts of things. So it's, in many ways, it's like an Active Directory construct without the barriers of Active Directory, adding in contractors, vendors, people inside and outside of the organization. It's really kind of a more modern Active Directory construct that reflects, you know, not the hierarchical organization that Active Directory reflects, but really more of the working reality of a modern group and those sorts of things as well. So definitely check out that session later on today. You know, SharePoint's undergone a massive shift in the last few years, and as you'll see in some of the demos, SharePoint is becoming more and more of this powerful platform behind the scenes that's underpinning a lot of the collaboration capabilities in Office 365. The old world of SharePoint, where you were building web content management sites and team sites and all these kind of individual web pages, is really going away, and we see SharePoint much more now as kind of a collection of tools and assets that we'll leverage across the Office 365 stack in different ways. File sharing, the OneDrive capabilities, the next generation sync client. Just show of hands, who's using the next generation sync client? Better experience, everyone? Worse? No? Better? I'll take this better. Yeah, so that's rolled out to OneDrive. We're rolling that out very soon to SharePoint team sites as well. And that modern file syncing protocol is much more efficient across the world. And what we see is SharePoint users generally aren't going to the website as much as they used to. Generally now we're interacting with SharePoint through another app, whether it's PowerPoint or Excel or Outlook, or even the native SharePoint apps itself. In the same sense, we're seeing the evolution of kind of internet sites and what an internet site is. The old days, an internet site was something that was almost like a public website. It was very heavily designed, it was customized, you wanted to look at a very specific way. Now what we're seeing is this trend towards working intranets, intranets that are much more about productivity, finding knowledge, than they are about landing the corporate brand internal to the organization. you have a public website to land the internal brand better as well. Of course, security, privacy, and compliance capabilities across SharePoint are consistent with the privacy capabilities across Exchange and all of our other Office 365 platforms. And finally, we still want to make sure that this environment is extensible. We know, for instance, that many SharePoint organizations have customized their SharePoint experience quite a lot. and that represents a challenge in the old way. Every time there was an upgrade, there were a big kind of lift and shift effort that you had to do to make sure those SharePoint web parts and environments and workflows and customizations worked in the new version. In an Office 365 environment where SharePoint Online is seeing updates weekly or sometimes daily, you don't want to have to lift and shift all of that code every single time. So we've introduced a new development model in SharePoint Online and also in SharePoint On-Premises where you can build these customizations and have it work consistently throughout these upgrade experiences. Outlook, the application that gets used more than any other application. And I'll show you a couple of demos of some things that we've improved in Outlook. Cloud attachments, for instance, I think is one of the most powerful features we've introduced in quite some time. It just changes the game around sending, receiving files, taking care of SharePoint permissions and OneDrive permissions automatically as you send them to different users as well. And also, how we evolve beyond distribution lists to these modern groups, these modern communication types, is something that we're really focused on as well. Obviously, the core of Office is still around creating, sharing, and finding content. And capabilities like Delve, OneDrive, My Analytics continue to improve those capabilities as well. And of course, Skype, you know, introducing not only instant messaging, voice over IP, video conferencing capabilities into Skype, but also now in Office 365, we're starting to introduce cloud PBX capabilities, the ability for the cloud to actually replace your traditional PBX system on-premises as well. And this is kind of a really interesting shift. I think your PBX upgrades aren't something that happen overnight. They're 5 years or 10 years out. But what we're seeing now is the technology is ready in the cloud, and the first organizations are starting to replace those PBX systems with a cloud-first system as well. And of course, in Skype, we also focus a lot on interesting devices to make sure that collaboration experience is as seamless as possible. If you have time, go down to the Office Showcase and check out the Surface Hub environment. It's very much a totally different collaboration experience. Being able to walk into a room, and we used to say there was the technology 10, the 10 minutes before a web conference or something like that everyone was just wasting time trying to get the conferencing system to work and the projector to work and those sorts of things. In a Surface Hub environment, it's literally just one click to join the experience and everything is set up for you as well. So definitely check that out. Don't take my word for it. So let's switch now and just show a quick case study of a customer that has really embraced Office 365 and started to change the way that they do business as well. And I have a couple of case studies that I'll talk about throughout this presentation. I think one of the things that I do want to highlight through some of these customers is that there are very different business problems with a lot of these customers, very different scenarios that are all being met by the same kind of collaboration and productivity systems as well. In this next example, you know, one of the big challenges that Kenner Metal had was being able to retain the knowledge and the intellectual property in their business. They're a manufacturer. They're not a business that you would typically associate with heavy intellectual property like a law firm or a finance firm or a consulting firm. But even still, in the kind of fourth industrial age, it's that intellectual property that really makes their organization function. So let's play the case study.
Our customers come to us to design a tool that will machine the hardest materials in the world.
That requires the brightest minds coming together to invent great things.
One of the biggest challenges we face is brain drain from all the engineers starting to retire. We need to find ways to bridge that gap. Office 365 allows the collaboration anytime, anywhere. We deployed it across the globe, 8,000 users in 2 months. Mobility changed the way our workforce looks at the company and how we make them part of the solution. We've given data analytics throughout the company. Every plant knows how we're performing against our quality goals. Our on-time performance has gone up in double digits over the last 14 months. When we looked at Google, they had some great technical capabilities, but they weren't enterprise ready.
Office 365 provides the infrastructure to connect employees, improve our bottom line by standardizing the best solutions.
The net result of that is better revenue, better decisions, better engineering designs. When you get everybody aligned in this company, there isn't anything we can't accomplish.
Just kind of an interesting example there. I haven't got any Australian case studies here because we'll basically just turn to the person sitting next to you, because it seems like everyone in this room is on Office 365, and I'm sure you have your own experiences adopting various technology elements of Office 365. So I don't want to drain the ocean of all of the different capabilities in Office 365, but I thought I'd show you a demo of Microsoft Teams. Who's using Teams today? Show of hands. Anyone? Yeah, it's a very interesting technology. I get a lot of questions about Teams, and I have strong opinions around how it works and where it works for me personally, and also how it's been working for different organizations. And so let's start with what Teams is. Teams is essentially a new app in Office 365 that is really built for teamwork. It's built for small, high-velocity teams to share content, get work done, and kind of aggregate all the different pieces of Office 365. If you think about Office 365 and where we, and even Office itself, you know, once upon a time it was just a series of applications, Word and Excel and PowerPoint, and you may have a word processor that was different to your spreadsheet engine and different features and functionality. And it wasn't until Office in the early 90s where we brought together all of those capabilities into the one suite, so that you could copy and paste functionality between applications. You could take a chart out of Excel and put it in PowerPoint. Control-C and Control-V did the same thing across all applications. And that suite model of sort of blurring the lines between what was PowerPoint and what was Word was really important. As we launched Office 365, we took that same approach where we wanted to blur the lines between what was Exchange management, what was SharePoint management, so that you could manage one consistent piece of infrastructure very simply. And now with Teams, you know, I like to think of it as returning to the user experience and starting to merge all the different capabilities of what you can use Teamwork for, whether it's a distribution list, whether it's a meeting, whether it's a file share, whether it's a OneNote notebook and those sorts of things, or a chat, and kind of merging them all together. And so this is a very new tool. We can have countless arguments of whether this is the right tool going forward or what it really is. I've heard people describe it as, it's just like Slack. It's a persistent chat tool. I have never used this as a persistent chat tool myself. And so it's kind of interesting to see how different people use it. If persistent chat is what you need in your organization, then you can do persistent chat. At Microsoft, we're email heavy. We send a lot of email every day. And so for us, persistent chat is email. It's asynchronous. You get an instant reply with email. If someone hasn't replied to an email in 15 minutes, then something's wrong. And that's just kind of our corporate culture, which is not necessarily the best culture, but it's the way that we do work. So Teams for us feels a really different niche. Teams for us is more like kind of an old-style SharePoint site where we're dropping in web parts and those sorts of things. It's providing a very centralized team environment. So let me jump into here and show you kind of an example. Playing the role of Megan in this demo. And Megan has a team. She's set up a team of the people she's working with. And essentially what you see here is a conversation thread. Very easy to have a conversation thread. This is a persistent chat thread. You can think of it like a discussion list or a forum or something like that. It's got some kind of fun features that the millennials love, like, hi guys, let's do work. You can waste a lot of time with the emoji finder. Of course, it has all the popular emojis that you're used to and that you need to get work done in the modern environment. We have a Giphy add-in, so if you need Valentine's Day animated GIFs, you can do that as well. We have a meme generator, because every good high-velocity team needs a meme generator. And we've got plenty. And even we have the most legal approved, uncontroversial, and uninsulting memes for developers, for lawyers. I need a notary, plead the fifth, overruled, Socratic method, we got sued, force majeure. And of course designers, and everyone likes to make fun of designers, so let's use a, where's my favorite here, CMYK or RGB, or there's plenty of ones that make fun of their clients here. So anyway, you can waste a lot of time with the meme generators and the office drama views as well. I'm waiting for the day that someone gets a HR violation for one of these meme generators. You know it's coming. But anyway, it's a cool feature. Kids love it in that kind of team view here. But that's really not what Teams is about. It's also about a set of files that all of those different organizations can have. And what you see in Teams is essentially us taking different elements of across the Office 365 stack in this group and putting them together. So a file area, a notes area, embedding other capabilities that you may have here. So let's get back to the team. I have different channels inside of my team as well, so I may have different discussions, whether I'm talking about the general channel or I'm talking about a budget channel. I can embed things like Planner, so if I'm using kind of a Kanban board or something like that to organize the work inside of my team, I have that embedded into my team's experience as well. There you go, there's my Kanban board. I'm embedding Power BI dashboards, for instance, into my Kanban board, into my team site as well. So it really becomes this kind of place where you can organize a lot of this different content together. It's available as a website. It's also available as an app. And this is something kind of really interesting as well. The app experience is often a lot more flexible. You can go offline. Obviously, you need to be online fairly regularly to get new content in this kind of high-velocity collaboration type environment. But the notion of an app makes it a lot easier to work across devices on your mobile phone, on an iPad, and those sorts of things as well. Now, it's not just for these big high-velocity teams where you may have a particular team as well. You can do a lot of interesting things one-on-one, and so you can think of this as a much more evolved instant message conversation, that, and maybe you have an instant message conversation that goes over time. Diego, for instance, here is Megan's boss, and so they can share content. Maybe they have a lot of meetings, and so they can have a shared OneNote notebook where they can keep all the notes of their one-on-one meetings together. They can jot down notes and essentially use this as kind of a much richer collaboration environment across these different areas as well. So, really interesting tool. What you see with Teams is it's definitely blurring the lines between a lot of these different apps. You know, I can see things like my meeting schedule, I can have instant message conversations, I can even, for instance, go to chat conversations here, jump into Nesta, let's call Nesta, for instance, and embed some of these capabilities all in that same environment as well. So I don't know which one. Who's going to be? Me. Yeah. Let me share my video here. So again, this is the capability that you know from Skype for Business, but it's kind of included inside of this Teams application. And is it duplicative? Absolutely. It's duplicative of how you do Skype calls. It's duplicative of how you do meetings and those sorts of things. But what we see with these sort of tools is it works for some groups in a very different way than it works for other groups. Some people do like working with SharePoint sites or over email or in Skype for Business and those sorts of things. That doesn't mean that everyone has to work on the same tools. What we want to make sure is that the framework behind everything is consistent. So the documents that I add here are stored in SharePoint and can be rights managed and archived and DLP applied just like SharePoint. The instant messages and the video calls that I can have here can be archived and tracked, and we can enforce ethical walls and those sorts of things in the same environment. So it really is kind of a mashup of all the different Office 365 capabilities in the one app. And this is an app that's evolving fast. You'll probably see this app change dramatically every month over the next 12 months as we get more feedback from how people are using these apps and those sorts of things as well. And it's kind of taken us a long time in Office 365 to realize that that's okay. There are certain apps inside of Office that absolutely need to be consistent and standard, and we've had 30 years to improve Excel and 30 years to improve Word, and so the kind of rate of change, the evolutionary change that happens to those apps is a lot slower and more consistent and more planned. Teams, this is another app that kind of in the past, in the old on-premises model, in the third industrial revolution, if you like, we wouldn't release this until it was done, and we'd spend the next 5 years analyzing how people are working with this and doing a beta and those sorts of things as well. Now with Office 365, we can enable this capability, release it, and you can work out if it works for your organization or if it doesn't, and enable it or disable it if you need to as well.
So let's jump back.
Mobility. And when we think about mobility, we think about not only mobility and how to work on mobile phones and those sorts of things, but also what is the mobility of the experience? We spent the last few years making sure that we had the best word processor on phones, the best spreadsheet processor on phones, the best email client on phones. The reality is, though, maybe a word processor is not the right thing for a phone. Maybe a spreadsheet isn't the right interface to a phone, and those sorts of things as well. And the kind of mobility of the experience means that even though there may be a particular workload that is common that people want to do on the road or away from their desk and those sorts of things, it doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to be a word processor or those sorts of things as well. Outlook is a great example. You know, Outlook runs on average 8 hours a day. It probably works harder than most of your employees. It's always running. You know, I have a lot of pity for the Outlook team because the cloud's getting bigger and bigger. Now you have 50-gig mailboxes, 100-gig mailboxes, and the PCs are getting smaller and smaller and thinner and lighter, and the poor Outlook client has to work harder and harder. But if you compare that to an Outlook experience on the phone, the average session length of Outlook on the desktop is about half an hour. The average session length of Outlook on the phone is about 20 seconds. It's a very different kind of usage paradigm that people are jumping in and out of apps and in and out and in and out of the Outlook apps. And so there needs to be kind of a different experience that you see. And so you'll start to see these apps diverge from one another on these different platforms. And they're fit for purpose for the mobility experience or the desktop experience or the tablet experience or the big screen experience. These are all things that we look at customizing here as well. We need to make sure that you know there is still that consistency of applications, that you can open documents on any platform and look at those documents across any platform. But again, it doesn't mean they all need to be the same. And that's probably why we think, like, while the web and web apps, we spend a lot of time investing in and making great web apps, we also believe that native apps have their place, and native apps, whether they're on iOS or Mac or PC or Android, are better when they belong on the device and look like they belong on the device and work on the device. It's relatively easy to make a web page that will render on all of these devices and a web experience that can be consistent across all of them, but the simple fact is the functionality is different on each of these applications as well. There are a few other sessions that we'll talk about our Enterprise Mobility and Security Suite across Office 365. But on the Office side, we work a lot with the Enterprise Mobility Suite team to make sure that our apps support all of those capabilities as well. We think about mobile device management, but also mobile application management and mobile information management. What does it mean, for instance, for a Word mobile app that may have your personal documents as well as your work documents on your phone, right? This is a BYOD device. I own it. The company doesn't own it, but I'm using it for work. And so being able to safely separate data from even within the app is something that we spend a lot of time on. And so Enterprise Mobility Suite has a lot of capabilities to not only manage the device, but also manage the specific application and enforce those ethical walls and sandboxing within the app and doing kind of targeted deletions, so being able to remove just the corporate data from the phone without upsetting the apps or without upsetting the rest of the phone as well. So talk now about intelligence. And intelligence is something that we spend a lot of time thinking about and talking about as well. And 5 years ago, intelligence was around business intelligence. It was sort of like, what could you do to make a better-looking dashboard or a better-looking chart, bring it to the web, and those sorts of things. Now, when we talk about intelligence, we're talking about machine learning, artificial intelligence, and using the kind of spare computation that we have in Office 365 to drive really interesting insights from the data, the information, the connection, the collaboration that happens inside of your environment as well. A simple example of this is Delve. Essentially what Delve is doing is it's really just exposing the search index to you in a very different form. Essentially what this is doing is, before you even type anything, here are the documents that are most relevant to you. And of course, an intranet search or a document search or a work search is very different from an internet search. You know, on the internet, you know, PageRank or those algorithms that this many links point to this site and this many links point to that site determine the ranking. Whereas in a document, you don't tend to have a lot of links pointing to those documents. And so Delve is looking at signals like who is opening the document, who's working on the document, how much time is spent on the document, is that document shared in Outlook, or are multiple people working on the document as well. And it's kind of surfacing all that content up to you, not only on your PC, but also in a phone app as well. You know, Power BI is another example of surfacing up that intelligent capabilities, and you see new capabilities in Office 365 around deriving insights from the data, being able to proactively recommend trends that are happening in that particular data set as well, not having to wait for a data analyst to compute all that data and give you the insight. But now with Power BI, we can actually present that insight back to you. And we've also targeted this with natural language search so that you can actually search and find particular assets just as if you were talking to them as well. And finally, My Analytics. And so My Analytics is an interesting tool to really get more intelligence and insight into all the things that are going on in your own calendar, in your own work life as well. And so rather than talk to these two more, let's jump back into a demo and show off some of these apps in the wild. So, there we go. Okay. So let's start with Delve. Hopefully most of you are familiar with Delve by now as well. What you see here is documents that are popular, that are rendering, that are being viewed around you. Everything surfaced here are things that you have permissions to see. So it's not showing you documents that you don't have permissions to see. It is trimming, security trimming all those documents out of the particular organization as well. There's a couple of things that you can do with these documents. You can tag them as favorites. You can add them to particular boards as well. And so if I have a lot of different documents, rather than essentially moving all of those documents into its own SharePoint site or something like that, what boards allow you to do is just tag these documents wherever they live, and you can see them as a consistent logical architecture as well. And so this is really useful, not necessarily for projects and teams, but particular topics. You may have like customer presentations that you're working on in your own OneDrive, and your colleague has the customer presentations they're working on in your own OneDrive. Rather than building yet another SharePoint site, copying all those things into a centralized SharePoint site, and then, let's be honest, you probably keep working on the documents in your own OneDrive and you don't port them back into Teams. This board concept allows you to group them and have a logical grouping without having to move them from where they are as well. And of course, then you can share these groups, these boards, similar to Pinterest, if you think of it like that as well. We can, of course, drill into specific people, see the documents that particular people are working on, see the people that person is working on, and all those sorts of things as well. We can drill into my own experience, and you can think of this not just like a search experience, but also as a replacement for the modern like address list, an address list app that lists what the people in the organization are doing. So here, in addition to the work they're working on, you can see a quick blurb about the person, their contact information, who they report to, and those sorts of things, and even where they're available, if they have calendar appointments available and those sorts of things. So very simple to see all of this stuff and manage your own kind of profile in this experience as well. But here's My Analytics. And so My Analytics is essentially a personal tool. So this is a tool for you. It's not something that's exposed to the rest of the organization. It's something for you to help manage your time better. And this is something that, again, this is one of those features that's available in Office 365, and I like to think of this feature, similar to Teams, as it's one on the kind of the cutting edge of the Office 365 capabilities. It will evolve a lot faster very quickly. And it's something that, you know, we talk about the cool, creepy line with a feature. And if you think of this imaginary line, and there are features that are above the line that are cool, and there are features below the line that are creepy. And it's all about how you use data and how you use information about a particular user to surface different things. For instance, if you go to a search engine and you start typing something and it somehow knows what you had for breakfast, kind of creepy. If, however, you're typing in restaurant recommendations into a search engine and it comes back with your favorite restaurants or favorite cuisine, cool feature. So it's kind of a simple example. And in My Analytics, looking at your calendar, looking at the time you're spending in meetings, looking at the time you're spending in emails, looking at the time you spend focusing on particular tasks, the time you spend after hours, if everyone in the organization could see this, creepy. If only you can see it, we believe it's a cool feature. And of course, we'll be adjusting that cool, creepy line as we see more people using these features and those sorts of things as well. But this is an example of an insight here, this food for thought. 100% of your meetings were shared with Lydia Holloway. Divide and conquer, free up both your calendars, one of you needs to get fired, all these things you could surface up in the application, you know, simply here and those sorts of things as well. Also, people you stay in touch with. Who are the people that you're working with most? Who are the people that you're collaborating with most? All of these things can help you plan your day a little bit better depending on your role and those sorts of things. Are you spending a lot of time with your manager? Can you, do you have one-on-one times? Does he read your emails or she read your emails? What is their response time? What is your response time? All this is kind of interesting signals to help understand like what you can do to work better inside of your own environment as well. And so again, really simple things and capabilities here that we're surfacing up in Office 365. And this is just, all this data exists. It exists even in your on-premises Exchange server or your on-premises SharePoint server. It exists in your own mailbox. And if you had the time, you could go and add up all the items in your calendar and those sorts of things as well. The thing that Office 365 brings us is that spare compute power, the computational power of the cloud allows us to compute all those log files, generate those log files, look for connections between different users, and those sorts of things are capabilities that we can only do in Office 365. But again, we want to make sure that this is a cool feature, respects users' privacy, and help. And again, we're a productivity tool. This is about improving productivity. This isn't a workflow management or a call center management app where we're trying to push particular metrics and those sorts of things as well. So let's change to Office now and talk a little bit more about intelligent apps in a slightly different way. Now, where should we start? Let's start with Excel. Who uses Excel? Everyone uses Excel. Who likes using Excel? There's always a couple. Yeah. The Excel team loves using Excel. It's their favorite app. So what I'll show you here is essentially a new chart type called a map. And what we're doing here with this map chart type, let's just load a little bit. is essentially we're taking this information and we're using a web service, in this case it's a Bing web service, to compute this information. And this is a kind of an interesting idea. Like, there's a lot of information inside of your organization, in Excel spreadsheets, in Office, and those sorts of things. Come on, Bing. That's kind of locked inside of your organization. At the same respect, like a search engine, whether it's Google or Bing, kind of has a lot of information around the rest of the world, around the public knowledge. And so what we've been working on really closely with the Bing team is how we can kind of join those two data sets together. How we can start to understand, like, the information that you have inside of your organization. Let's just accept these. Here we go. This one's loading a bit faster. So here, for instance, I have a list of counties, and this, I think, is like Georgia in America or something like that. So a list of counties, the gas price, and the change in gas price from 2 years ago. And so essentially what we're doing there, without having to list like the county borders or any of those sorts of things, Bing understands that that's a county, they have different areas, it has a geographical boundary, and so we can build this kind of intelligent map of that particular app content as well. Let's see, here's a different example of a worldwide view. Sorry, my network's running a little slow today. But there you go. So in this map, really simply now, we can see the difference in GDP before and after. I think before the oil prices fell, and the percentages of GDP, and has it gone better or worse? For Australia, lower oil prices mean higher GDP. For Russia, lower oil prices mean lower GDP. So you can very quickly see the impact of some of these things. Of course, you could have used tools to do this, like ArcGIS and those sorts of things, or you could have a data science, spend months doing this, but this is a simple feature in Excel that's much easier to kind of get some of that capability instantly as well. So let's look at PowerPoint next. Let's look at a different PowerPoint. Sorry, this one. So a lot of time when we think about intelligence, we're thinking like data analysts and like how can we automate some of those kind of big, complex tasks. Let me just see. But there's a role for intelligence in actually doing kind of the softer skills. Design, for instance, is something that traditionally we've thought of as like it's an art. I mean, design is an art form. The creatives need to have their complete creative freedom to do interesting things and draw interesting patterns and those sorts of things as well. The simple fact is, though, that most of design is actually a science. Most design, you have a very specific rules and heuristics around what looks good, what colors work with other colors, and those sorts of things. So there are rules in design. And so essentially what we can do when we know that something has rules, we can automate it, we can apply machine learning, and that's what we've done with PowerPoint with a feature called Design Ideas. So let me just show you how this feature works here. Essentially, I can paste in an image. Generally, that's not where the image should go. Design Ideas essentially pops up a view of multiple different options of where that image would look better. Embedded behind the screen is a faded thing. Change the layout of the slide a little bit more. Do these sorts of things, these capabilities, and essentially give me different options of how slides should look with those particular images. So that's an example of just applying a heuristic inside of PowerPoint. The technology behind this started with a tool called Sway, for those that had seen Sway before. Sway is, again, another one of these experimental features. And the question that we're trying to answer with Sway is, what does a document look like when you abstract away its kind of delivery experience? Can you build a document at design time that can match whatever output that you're looking at as well? And so the notion of Sway, for instance, I'm writing essentially an article here. Rather than laying out like kind of the what you see is what you get type experience that we're used to, here we're just laying out different areas of content. We're telling the software what's important, what's a heading, what's text, what's kind of embedded content, and those sorts of things. And then, depending on the size of the screen and those sorts of things, we can actually have the software generate the design for that particular article. So in this particular case, we've generated a much more responsive article than perhaps we'd seen in the past. We can scroll down here for these particular environments as well. I can customize this if I don't want that kind of layout. Sway can dynamically redesign that particular layout as well, as more of a tablet layout where I can swipe from side to side as well. And so this is kind of, again, new capability in Office 365. Let's remix that content as well. Remix essentially just applies, yeah, it looks ugly. Software's not perfect. So we can apply kind of multiple designs to that same content. We can change the layout, for instance, if we want to look at it more like a article, like something, a long form kind of article. We can tell Sway to redo it in that sort of experience. And again, now we have that same kind of article here. Again, I've got, just taking a little bit to load, but these are embedded videos here. So I can embed multiple pieces of content into this environment as well. And so, you know, a tool like Sway, really interesting, has a very interesting use case. But what you see in the PowerPoint design ideas and those sorts of things is us taking things that we learned from Sway and embedding them into kind of those traditional apps. And so, you know, PowerPoint, not necessarily a great place for us to experiment with interesting new ways of adding machine learning into generate presentations. But a tool like Sway we can use, we can get feedback. It's super relevant for some organizations, like education. Schools are using this quite a lot for modern, like more immersive reports and presentations and those sorts of things. But again, for the kind of more conservative organizations, these learnings and these features come back into those PowerPoint apps, and you'll see similar things in Excel and Word and those sorts of things as well. Let's show some examples in Word. Spelling. Who's a good speller? We got many good spellers here? No? Couple good spellers. Grammar. Any good people with grammar? Couple? Who knows what an Oxford comma is? Couple? Double negatives? No, not many. Okay, so what I'm going to show you now is essentially a writing style feature. And this is a new feature that you'll see appear in some of the new Word builds, the monthly builds of using Office 365 Pro Plus as well. Traditionally, grammar, we've looked at a bunch of different things. This is the green squiggly line in Office. But what we've added, what we'll add very soon, is what we call a gold squiggle. And a gold squiggle is not only grammar, but it's also writing suggestions as well. And so here you can see a bunch more options here, like looking for complex words, double negation, jargon, normalization, passive voice, euphemisms, wordiness, words expressing uncertainty, age bias, disability bias, gender-specific language, racial bias, sexual orientation bias, geopolitical references, cliches, value adjectives, contractions, informal languages, slang, and of course, the Oxford comma. And so this is kind of a really interesting feature. And so to kind of give you an example, these are some different examples of different words here. Did I just turn that feature off? I turned it off. I got carried away with my reading out the screen. Okay, proofing, grammar settings, turn it all on. Okay. Let me open this up again. All right. Why are you not showing? Oh, there it is. So, comfy. Consider using more formal language. Comfortable. Double negation. I did not see nothing. Did not see anything. The company has hired a well-known headhunting firm. It's kind of jargon. You should use recruiting firm. They don't take heads anymore. They were quickly caught by the police. The police quickly caught them. This kind of makes you feel really uneducated very quickly. Split infinitives. The state should hire more policemen, police officers. The cat barfed all over my homework last night. He's vomited. they bought apples, oranges, and pears. What's missing here? The Oxford comma. So really interesting kind of a use case here for different ways of like looking at that content and just making language seem more professional. And really that's the idea of Office. We're helping people with average skills like myself look great. So it'd be really interesting to run a tool like this across like... so you see here, like, you know, perhaps use a simple word. And don't just decide the course of America. Don't determine it. The United States of America, January 20th. What are some other examples here? Yeah, so anyway, really interesting tool. You'll see this pop up soon in some of our early adoption builds as well. The other kind of thing that we're introducing here, and again, this is using some machine learning capabilities. This is a feature I really like. Where's my pet hate? Pet hate. This one. Principle. For some reason, every time I see this used wrong, it just makes me angry. And so what we've added here to spell check is a pretty simple thing. We've added essentially some descriptive words, some synonyms, so you know whether you're picking the right principle or principal or principles, essentially like that. The amount of principal engineers I've seen is kind of an interesting thing. And again, similar with dyslexic users. You know, dyslexic users may not be able to spell, or they may make kind of common spelling mistakes, may not even realize that it's a spelling mistake, and so principle, for instance, is a common one to trip up dyslexic speakers because they're using the wrong spelling check. And so here you can see some examples of how we've improved that in Word as well. One more demo of some intelligent design. Let's look at references here. And this is a feature called Researcher. It's primarily for education. Anyone working for a school or education department? A couple of people. So this is an interesting example. You know, we talk a lot about collaboration in Office. In the school environment, collaboration is generally called plagiarism. and so copying stuff, you know, copying different information is something that not necessarily recommended. And so here what we've done is using Researcher, we've kind of, again, connected to the Bing knowledge graph of different topics and different areas to help students plan out different essays or plan out different reports and essentially make sure that they're using citations appropriately as well. So, for instance, let's look at wind power here. Rather than go to the browser and do a whole bunch of research on Wikipedia and then get distracted by whatever's happening in the news or Netflix or something like that, Researcher is essentially embedded into the Office client that we can look at various different things. We can look at sources here. Wind power, I want to add that as a heading. I can drill into this content a bit more. And I can see, yeah, here's a journal, for instance, that I can, let's add a citation for that particular topic. We're embedding that here. We want to add that content. I can add that particular topic again, and essentially we're generating a reading list as we go down through the document, and as we look at kind of our bibliography, because we're adding it through this source, I mean, it's not helping us write the article, it's just kind of collecting our sources for us that we can go back and study later. And so where we see that, those items are automatically embedded into our bibliography, so we can go back and look at those particular assets as well. So helping users cite the right content, find the right content, is something we're looking very closely in using a tool called Researcher. We're working on another feature which is kind of the counterpoint to this, which is called TAP. And so essentially, rather than looking at Wikipedia and looking at journal sources and those sorts of things, using the Delve graph to be able to pull back particular charts from your colleagues and some co-workers, and again, collaboration, not plagiarism, to help build those documents and those reports and those PowerPoint presentations with capabilities from across the organization as well. Okay, I'm talking too much, so let's jump back and show some more really boring slides. Trusted platform. Many of you are on Office 365, so you're already convinced or at least mollified that the things that we do around compliance are top-notch. Privacy is top-notch. The enterprise protection capabilities we have are top-notch. But what I really want to do is kind of show you some of the interesting things that we're doing in Office 365 around... That's all right, you're not missing much. There were six slides there. I went through pretty fast. So if you think about Office 365, and when we look at it from a security point of view, you know, we're thinking not only, and this is not just Office 365, but also Windows 10 now and the Windows 10 Advanced Threat Protection. We essentially have this kind of fabric from spam and system updates to security capabilities, denial of service attacks we see, logins, device logins, MFA, all the different logging systems across Microsoft, even into things like Hotmail, where we see different trends in spam and malware attacks and phishing attacks and those sorts of things. And essentially, we can gather all that information together. And there's a lot of different information. There's 300 billion user authentications, a billion Windows devices sending back signals of what they're seeing from attacks around the world, all the emails that are coming through, not only Exchange Online, but also, whatever we call it now, Outlook.com, Hotmail. All of that information is kind of being collated and understood so that we can generate a really interesting security view of this capability. This is something called Threat Intelligence. It's coming soon. It's in preview right now. You can see it. But essentially what it's doing is looking at all those different data points and giving you a view of what's going on in the world and what's going on in your particular organization as well. Likewise with data governance, to see how your rules, regulations, compliance are being respected inside of your organization is something that we're working on as well. Taking that graph of information that we're collecting and exposing it back so it's relevant to your particular organization. And this is a brand new feature that I want to demo now called Secure Score. Any security professionals in the room? One, two... I was going to say some stuff about security professionals, but now I'm worried. Sorry, let me bring this up. Okay. I am sick and tired of security professionals and the security industry. I think it's something that has become so... Wild West with all these different tools. Your AV software slows down your entire computer. The solutions, you know, it's very hard to tell the difference. There's kind of a lot of like stories and folklore about like what works and what doesn't. Hang on, let me see if I can get this. I think I've crashed the device here. This is what happens when you badmouth security people. Can you switch me to input 6? Nope. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of different security systems. I'll just ramble for a while we fix this. There's a whole bunch of different security systems and security technology and security stories. You should do this, you should do that. This isn't secure. And it just feels depressing. Like you don't even know what you should be doing, what the steps you should be doing, what the capabilities are, things. Okay, no worries, yeah. Yeah, so all of this stuff is kind of blurred and it's very hard to understand like what's really going on. Secondly, it's then very hard to find specialist skills for security. It's hard to recruit those people, it's hard to keep those people. Even if you do have a security professional on staff, you don't have enough security professionals to do 24/7, follow the sun, round the clock support, and all the different attack vectors that are coming at your organization. And so that's, you know, one of the things that we've seen with Office 365 is a realization from a lot of different organizations that this is a mug's game to try and keep up with all of that. There are absolutely security things and risk things that we need to take into account. We need to understand our business risk, and no one will understand our business risk better than than us ourselves. But in terms of security, Microsoft knows more about Exchange Online security than anyone else in the world. If you have someone that knows more about Exchange Online security than Microsoft, we will hire that person. We can probably pay more for that person. And we run kind of follow the sun, round the clock, network operation centers to manage not only Office 365, but Windows, Azure, and all of these capabilities. And so what we're looking at with Secure Score and some of our advanced security and management capabilities is just exposing that to you so you can benefit from that information. You can make informed decisions without having to look at all those capabilities as well. There we go. Do you want me to try a different plug? Okay. Can you get any of these to work? Any questions? Great. Well, give it two more minutes, and then if not, I'll let you guys out early. Secure Store, though, securescore.office.com. If you're an administrator and you're a tenant, you can log in there. And what we essentially do is give you a score based on all the settings that you have configured and how your users use Office 365, how you're administering Office 365. And we essentially give you a score of how that environment works. There we go. Input 6. No. Okay. Well, securescore.office.com. We have a bunch more security sessions at the conference. I'll be hanging around at the booth. So if you have any other questions about anything we've covered, that'd be great. But thanks very much for your time this morning.